open a public hearing on Senate Bill 858A. I see Senator Verger here to testify. Oh, Cletus, you will have to read the bill. Yes, sorry, not used to this.
Members, this is
SB. Please ignore my ass
members. Thank you very much, Madam Vice Chair. I'm here today. But
I'm sorry. I'm not used to this, and I have to have him read the bill first, and then we'll have you continue. I apologize.
Let me tell you who I am first. That's for the record. I'm Joanne Berger. I'm a state senator from Senate District 5.
Thank you, Senator. Committee and Chair, SB 858A requires space in voters' pamphlet designated for a portrait or statement filed by candidate, political party, or assembly of electors to include disclaimer, including that the state of Oregon or county does not warrant the truth or accuracy of the information contained in the statement.
Thank you very much. I'm here today to submit Senate Bill 858. To put a short disclaimer, at the bottom of the voter's pamphlet position papers, and I want to apologize for my laryngitis. I didn't have any voice yesterday, so I'm very happy to have enough voice today to be able to give testimony. This problem was brought to my attention when I realized that the voters in my district were misled into believing that the information in the voter's pamphlet were verified by the Secretary of State's office for accuracy. This is an understandable misconception. After all, the voter's pamphlet comes in the mail. It looks official. It has a government seal on the cover. It looks very much like other government documents that have been received in the mail. So it's a natural assumption by citizens to assume that the voter's pamphlet was prepared by the government, therefore has the authority of accuracy of the government. However, as you probably know, and I know, this is not the case. Only the top portion of each entry has been verified for accuracy. The rest of the position papers could have any information, misinformation, disinformation that the candidates or proponents or opponents of initiatives want. Most people use this space, and you probably did, for your platform. But this is not always the case. The Secretary of State's office will fix misspellings and eliminate obscenities. They do not change any of the content, even if it is blatantly untrue, even if the text is not about the topic at hand. There is a disclaimer buried in the introduction of the voter's pamphlet. However, people do not tend to read this section. It is vitally important that the voter's pamphlet be created in such a way as to minimize any possible misconceptions. That is why I am here to submit Senate Bill 858 to you. To add just a small disclaimer at the bottom of each position paper that states that the above information has not been verified for accuracy. And I want to tell you that if you are running for office as a candidate and someone chose to list a long list of organizations that you have previously belonged to, even though you have never been associated with any of those organizations, it would be very difficult for you to change that perception with the thousands of people that the voter's pamphlet goes to. If this is a very simple bill, it's a very small bill, but it's an extremely important bill to the people at that table, at the dais. And up until now, I do believe that primarily that particular part of the voter's pamphlet has always been used by people to talk about what they stand for and their positions. This is changing. And I would like for you to take very seriously a look at having this disclaimer there where it's quite visible to the person that is receiving that document. And I'd be happy to answer any questions, Madam Chair.
Any questions? Senator, I just promoted you. Representative Farr.
I like the sound of that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Verger, could you give us some examples of some of these statements that you believe contain false information or misleading information.
Right. It could be anything. It can be absolutely anything. If, for instance, it could say that Representative Farr is a flaming liberal who believes in things that her constituents do not believe in. You'd have a hard time undoing that particular statement. It could say that Representative March had been a former member of the Ku Klux Klan. He would have a hard time proving that that was not a true statement. Anything can be said in the lower part on the position papers. The fact that it has not been used in that way up until very recently, that has made it not an issue. And the disclaimer has been small. I don't know exactly what you'll hear today about the cost of adding the disclaimer. I would think that it could be certainly something that would not add cost to the voter's pamphlet. But I do believe that as a candidate for office, you need to be represented for the person that you are. And you have that opportunity in your position paper. What you don't have is what someone else might say about you in that. So people tend to understand it with initiatives or issues. They know their pros and cons, and so they seem to not be confused by that. I did not realize that people felt that it had all been verified for accuracy until I started asking. And then I found out that that was indeed not at all true.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Greenlich.
I think what you say is true and is a problem, but I was wondering whether we might not want some stronger approach. I mean, it would seem to me just putting in the bottom of the voter's pamphlet that it's not been verified is a very strong thing. I mean, you could imagine something like getting the draft material for the voter's pamphlet, submitting it to all the candidates in that race, and having a process for protesting blatantly incorrect information. I mean, why don't we really try and do something about it? Because I think your issue is absolutely right.
I was very serious about the bill, and we had to work a little bit on the language so that it would be, the language is actually a compromise where it says it has not been verified by the state of Oregon, and then it says it's not been verified by the county, because actually the county people requested that that be given. So it's probably more of a problem than those of us who are in political life realize. They were apparently getting questions. So, but I see that someone is here from the Secretary of State's office who, of course, put out the pamphlet, and I'm sure that he can probably discuss with you further, but I definitely think that you need a disclaimer.
Okay. Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you, Senator.
Thank you very much.
Is there anybody else here who would like to testify on Senate Bill 858A?
Madam Chair,
yes.
I had a question for the Secretary of State's office, if they'd be so kind to come forward.
I'm sure that you would be happy.
It would be worth trying to listen.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Fred Neal, the campaign finance manager and the voters pamphlet supervisor for the elections division.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Fred, I was curious, is it a violation of some statute to knowingly put false information in the voters pamphlet?
Madam Chair, Representative Holvey, it is a Class C felony to knowingly falsify the required information that you were required by statute to attest to the truthfulness of in your candidate statement. That's the occupational information, the educational information, prior governmental experience. And in the voter's pamphlet, if you'll recall your own or your opponent's from the last race, that's the... Those are the headings that we automatically put in boldface heading, and those headings don't go to your word count, but the what you put behind those headings to fill in the blanks do go towards your word limit. And we've had one in the last 10 years, one
prosecution several complaints about false information in the required information, which is false swearing, RS-260. I don't remember the statute. 715-1. If you require, it's like your C&E statements. You're required to attest, if you're the candidate or treasurer, to attest to the to your best of your knowledge, this is true and accurate information. If you falsely swear to that, that is a Class C felon.
But the rest of it?
The rest of it is only subject to the limitation we, by a statute, are proscribed from, the secretary, is proscribed from publishing anything that is libelous, incites hatred or violence towards an individual or a group of individuals, or could not be sent through the U.S. mails.
I'm just curious, if you saw something that you knew to be false, even though it didn't fall under one of those headings of being libelous or slanderous or inciting injury or riot, what would you do? What can you do in your position as Elections Division?
Well, Madam Chair, again, Fred Neal, the your opponent's statement, as with yours, is not public information for the until the fourth business day after the filing deadline. At that time, and which is well in advance, if you will, kind of well in advance, we've already started production, but we're not so far down the path that we can't be told by a court to not print that. But that would be an action by you against your opponent in Marion County Circuit Court. Because there is an election law that is enforced by the parties, not by the state, on false misrepresentation of material fact, RS-265-532. And so you go into court, and the judge is supposed to put that to the top of their docket, and there's even non-real damages awarded. You couldn't really prove a financial injury to yourself, but there's $2,500 ding your opponent and be stayed from the court from allowing that statement to stand. There is somewhat of a deadline. There's also a provision in the voters pamphlet statutes that say that a court action can't keep the Secretary of State from publishing the whole pamphlet. And so there are some deadlines that we kind of get into. We get into this with whether a measure is appropriately legally certified to the ballot or not. And here we are taking arguments and getting fiscal impact statements developed and getting into production to mail out 1.6 million of these in time for the voters to have the information about that measure and the Supreme Court's calling us to say, well, what's your drop dead date for mailing, or going to the printer? But that's the there is a First Amendment issue as far as what you can say in the part that you're not by law required to swear to the truthfulness of.
Well, just as a follow up, I know that there's a process apparently for a candidate to go through if their opponent should be publishing something that's blatantly untrue. I'm just wondering if you, as a person knowing a candidate very well and knowing that the statement is false, I'm just wondering, would that same procedure need to be followed? I guess it would in that way. Okay. That was essentially it.
We're not a party to it, and I don't know really any candidates that well.
Come on, Fred.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Fred, one more question. I'm curious, did the Secretary of State's office get many inquiries or complaints or comments about the accuracy of things in the voter pamphlet?
Madam, Mr. Chair, Representative Olby.
Hey, where are you going with that?
Hey. It's usually with measure arguments that we see that. There's always some question if somebody's used an abbreviation for their alma mater, if they have a post-high school degree. We had an issue with the candidate, a legislator 20 years ago, who said that they were a graduate of Columbia University and truncated the Columbia University, I think it's the Columbia Correspondence University, or the Columbia University by mail. But there is an institution other than Columbia University in New York City that shortened version is, and the state could not prove and did not prosecute because we were told by the Criminal Justice Division of the Attorney General's Office that it's partially true, and so it really pretty much has to be to prove beyond a, it's a felony offense, and so to prove beyond a reasonable doubt, you've got to have pretty compelling evidence that they weren't just abbreviating that institution, and that's in the required information. That's other than the incident where we did successfully prosecute, that maybe it may happen once or twice in an election cycle that the opponent or a constituent has, or we get calls that say, well, they weren't on the budget advisory committee, they were on the citizens advisory committee on the budget for rural fire protection district, blah blah blah, and I think, well, you know, that's so close, and it's not. It's, we're not going to open an investigation and refer it to the AG's office.
Fred, I think you went to the you and Mitch must be alums of the same school of answering questions. Is that accurate?
Didn't you get a no answer that your brain was wrong when you were wrong? I want to share this 2 letters. It's the shortest possible answer it could have been. What are you whining?
From now on, when I have a question of the carrier of Representative Greenlake, I'm going to say, will you spell the answer? The problem is, regardless of how long, he could do it.
Yeah, but not correctly.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, because Fred did sort of take my question and almost answered it, but I was just sort of
more than almost.
I mean, my question was more about, you know, the information that's in the voter's pamphlet. Does the Secretary of State's office get calls about, you know, people questioning the accuracy of what's been printed? Just a simple, do they or do they not?
Yes, we get calls.
That's what I wanted to know. Thanks.
We don't get many, but we do.
I would think the intent of this legislation, Representative, I would think the intention of this legislation would be because people probably don't call and would probably assume that what they do read is true because it is in a state manual. So that's what I would think the intent was.
Sure.
Representative Farr.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Fred, I asked this question of Senator Verger, and I maybe didn't frame it correctly, but what I was getting at was, can you give us some specific examples, or do you know of any in past election cycles where someone in their voter's pamphlet statement made inflammatory remarks against their opponent or false claims about their opponent?
Chair Kitts, Representative Fard, no, I don't have a recollection of specific instances where statements were made by a candidate about their opponent that was deemed by the opponent to be inaccurate about them. And we find mostly the candidates want to talk about themselves. They're trying to sell themselves to the voters. The one complaint that I think comes most to my mind was a measure argument with, and there already is a disclaimer in the voters' pamphlet statements, and this was about a woman in Southern Oregon that had a history of more than active animal rights activities that, in fact, got her crosswise of law enforcement in California, and that was brought forth. Well, it was true, but she felt that this was putting too much attention on her past and as opposed to the issue before the voters.
Thank you, Fred. I would also, you know, conclude, I mean, I think that people can write whatever they want in their voters' pamphlet. I mean, technically, granted, you know, West Coolidge,
I wasn't even going to mention him by name.
Well, these things do happen. I think that people assume that what they do read is true, and I think in a lot of situations, people, based on that assumption, we've all, as candidates, have made phone calls to potential voters, you know, hi, this is Representative or Candidate X, I'm running for such and such. And that person on the other line will say to you, I haven't made up my mind yet. I'm waiting until this weekend before the election. I'm going to read my voter's pamphlet. Mm-hmm. And it is the single document that every registered voter gets. And I think that that's...
Actually, they get the ballot, too.
They do get the ballot. Thank you, Representative.
A government document.
Thank you. A government document. Thank you, Representative Greenlick. Colleagues, this is a good bill. If we could not beat it to death, that would be great. Thank you.
Fred, when I mentioned a stronger verification process, I thought you blanched back there. And I was wondering whether the process... I mean, I think this is important, but... Would something like formally sending the material in a contested election to both candidates and having some sort of an adjudication process based on things that were blatantly for? I mean, taking it to the courts is a complicated business. But
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlick, we have assiduously in the Secretary of State's office for a number of years not wanted to get in the middle of an election dispute between the parties as to the truthfulness when that's somewhat nuanced. The Secretary of State's office itself is a partisan statewide elected office, so it's sort of sensitive to have a clearly impartial judge adjudicate that between the parties has always been our preference. In response, in the past, I've said I certainly think I'm quite capable of being the supreme arbiter of truth, but I don't know that you would want me to be.
Fred, I can speak for myself, but I won't. Colleagues, good bill. I'm going to close the public hearing and open work session.
You can say whether the voter's pamphlet was an official state document. Is that something you wanted to check?
No. Any discussion? Any objection? Representative Verger, thank you very much. Sorry that I was late. Senator. I apologize. Okay.
I called her for senator.
I apologize. Easy people.
We didn't want to let her go to the Senate.
Senator Verger, whom I have the utmost respect for and have stated time and time again on the floor and publicly, and am more than happy to do so in this building, and she knows that I would never disrespect her. I'm impugning everybody every day this week. I don't know what my problem is. Annetta, will you please call the roll?
Is there a motion?
Did we
have a motion,
please?
Oh, I thought I was a dictator. I'm sorry. Representative Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the House bill. Actually, I think this is Senate bill, but it says House bill. I move Senate bill 858A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barr moves Senate bill 858A, you said?
Yes, sir.
To the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none. Or hearing none. Annetta.
Aye.
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 Chair votes aye. Colleagues, is this a bill we want to discuss on the floor?
I move it to the consent calendar.
Representative Greenlick moves it to the consent calendar. Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you so very much. I think we'll all be glad.
Yes, we will.
We will. Thank you for bringing
that
forward. I think we've got a draft introduced.
We'll see if there's support here.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
I move it to myself.
Mr. Chair, I move LC 3614, the draft as a committee bill.
Mm-hmm. Representative Thatcher moves LC 3614, relating to the Public Utilities Commission, be drafted as a committee bill. Is there any objection? Seeing none. be so ordered. Thank you, committee. Adjourn.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mitch.
You got the clear message.